Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
It's time for Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We are so back. The All-Star break has come, it has gone, and the Milwaukee Brewers winning two pretty exciting games right out of the break against the Minnesota Twins, a 2-game sweep at Target Field in Minnesota. They're back to 15 games above 500. They are 5 games up on the St. Louis Cardinals for first place in the National League Central. It's still pretty exciting times and a very interesting week, even without a lot of games, even with just 2 games. And we're here to discuss that. My name again is J.R. Radcliffe. I am joined by my colleague at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers reporter, Kurt Hoge. Kurt, usually you go to Minnesota. What happened this week? This time around, it was our colleague Todd Rosiak who made
Todd. Todd's actually taken it the last 2 years.
Really? I thought Minnesota was your thing.
Well, my in-laws do live there, but he loves Minnesota. He loves that park. It's an underrated park. Now, logistically, could they have a roof? It might make some sense.
I wonder how much he loves it after rain delays on back-to-back days.
So I had the 3 rain delay game there in 2022, which included 2 real ones and a 3rd one where they were faked out. They thought they needed to bring the tarp out, and then it didn't rain. And they were like, oh boy. And then it started raining about 20 minutes later, like torrential. Like the skies were black. It was the most ominous scene I've ever been a part of.
Yeah. Always some weather in Pittsburgh and in Minnesota. There's always weather when the Milwaukee Brewers are in town, but
yes, I get Pittsburgh. Todd does not like Pittsburgh.
No,
I'm fine with Pittsburgh. I think it's a good time.
Great park.
Furries.
We will not be seeing Pittsburgh last week, this week, or otherwise. Later on, is it in August or September? I don't know when Pittsburgh comes up on the schedule next, but
that is September. Late in the year, I think. Yeah.
Neither here nor there, unless you want to talk about how the Brewers are going to be done with Chicago Cubs by the end of this week, because they will be going to Wrigley Field tomorrow, Monday through Wednesday, to kind of return to the earnest part of the schedule here and then return home for a 3-game series against the Marlins. We can talk a little about that, but there's a lot to discuss. There was a draft this week. There was an All-Star game this week. There is a trade deadline right around the corner, 9 days away, and the Milwaukee Brewers, holy mercy, do they need pitching? And we will talk about that, but I want to start with Jackson Chourio, Kurt. I think he might be him. I think Jackson Chourio might live up to all the expectations. Now, understandably, a small sample. It's not like he is, you can't get him out or anything like that. He's not like white hot, but he is pretty dang hot over the past, I would say, 35 games or so. And the series in Minnesota was pretty much all about Jackson Chourio. He goes 3-for-5 in game 1. He has a very key hit in extra innings. He makes a diving catch to end the game, an 8-4 win, a wild 8-4 win in extra innings. And then on Sunday, he homers again to tie the game. I'm trying to remember if that one tied or gave him the lead. I don't remember. I think tied it. A big 7th inning home run. He made another incredible defensive play, jumping on top of the wall in foul territory to make a catch. Saber loves him defensively. Saber released like the best players in the AL and the NL and had him 3rd with Bryce Turang 1st. We need to talk about that a little bit, but just in general, I don't have a question. I just have something to say, and it's Jackson Chourio.
I feel like I had to talk a lot of people, maybe not off a ledge, but the precipice of the gate that is in front of the ledge on Jackson Chourio over
so
the first
to be
couple
clear,
months.
If it hits the precipice, is it officially a home run or do we have to review? I'm trying to figure out how this all the machinations of this work.
I see. No, you need a review. You need a review. Just like whose homer was that today?
That was Reese Hoskins.
Reese Hoskins hit a home run. People forget that. People being me.
I don't forget that. That was a big hit. That was a huge hit on Sunday, but okay.
Going back to June 2nd. So yeah, 30, you nailed it. 35 games. He had an 843 OPS coming into today. You would venture to guess that's probably in the 860, 870 range after the game he had. His strikeouts, he's only struck out 22 times in 129 plate appearances. It's quite good. He's hit 5 homers in that stretch. He's hitting over 300. It's not white hot, but it's even better in a way because it's been two whole months of well above average offense. And like, this is not Owen Miller's May from last year.
No offense to Owen Miller. Shouts to you, but that May was incredible.
But it was not like the way it was gone about, the way the balls were hit, mm-hmm. and the swing decisions that were made. It just wasn't totally sustainable. This is pretty dang good. This is why you let him go through what he went through in May. I think Pat Murphy has done a pretty dang good job of handling him too. Like there was times in the middle of those funks he was in, where it was like, are we sure this is the way you want to handle your $82 million guy? Like benching him for Oliver Dunn, pinch hitting him, pinch hitting for him late in the game all the time. Are we sure that's right? Well, what do I know? I don't know squat. Clip that. Send it to Craig Council.
He will not appreciate
take. He'll probably agree with it. He would not appreciate my take. It's a bad thing.
That's something we could touch on in 3 Up 3 Down, actually, if we want. I might decide to venture there. I don't know. We've talked about this time and again. The way that he has developed over the course of his minor league career is to struggle and then figure it out and then start raking. Struggle, figure it out, and start raking. It's been a pattern. He's only 20, so it's not like there's a long history of this because he's only been in the minor leagues for, 3 years. 2021, they brought him in, right? So I don't want to say that that's a huge track record, but you knew that he was going to figure it out, or at least you suspected he would based on how his career had gone to this point. And then he did, he figured it out. And I don't, figured it out is too strong. There's a lot of hills and valleys left, I would say, but I think at this point, I mean, it's gone from, should he play every day? Do they need to send him down to, why is he not hitting like fifth in the lineup?
He's one of your top three players on the offense.
That's completely true.
That's where we are.
Yeah.
Churio didn't struggle his first full season in stateside ball. Like he was never like, that's how he shot up so high, but he struck out a lot at Carolina. Mm-hmm. And that was the glaring concern. It was like, okay, is he going to be able to like make contact in the zone? And he figured that out. Like that was the adjustment he made. So yeah, this is just kind of what he does. Like he's really talented. He's really athletic. And you bet on those players more often than not to make the necessary adjustments. Like they kind of just figured out. Sometimes it doesn't work out, but that $82 million bet on him is that he would figure it out. And I would say, like all things considered, this is probably maybe 60th to 70th percentile outcome for him rookie season total. Yeah. Like he's hitting league average, and he's playing pretty dang good defense. So yeah, maybe it's 70th percentile. Is that fair?
I think it is fair. I don't think he's going to win rookie of the year. I'm afraid unless Paul Skeens just falls off a cliff, maybe literally falls off a cliff. I really don't think he's going to lose it. There are even a couple more candidates obviously right now that are finishing ahead of Churio, but this is a really good case scenario for his 20-year-old season. What do you think of him defensively? Because the eye test will tell you it is still a work in progress. There've been moments over the course of the year where he didn't dive and it felt like he could have maybe dove for the ball or just misplayed, misread it. You chalk some of that up to just learning these fields, these outfields, but Saber loves him, and it's not the only statistic that has been assembled defensively that has suggested Jackson Churio is actually pretty good on defense. We know he's fast, so the speed is good. He has gotten better. I would never think of him as a top, honestly, they have so many good defensive outfielders on this team. I think you'd have to convince me that he's even a top three. He's a top two defensive outfielder, because I would easily put Mitchell and Perkins ahead of him. And then I would probably put Frelick ahead of him too. But I don't know. What do you think of his defensive acumen at this point?
I was talking defense with Jonathan Judge, friend of the mm-hmm. podcast, baseball prospectus man, very good with numbers. And he said something interesting where he was like, basically the way they see it is most of outfield defense is just being fast.
Mm.
And that's
it.
It kind of feels like how it is with Jackson Churio. Like He makes plays because he's fast.
Yeah.
It's not because necessarily he's like an adept outfielder. Now, the catch Sunday really stood out to me because that was a really impressive play. Like knowing where that fence is in foul territory at a different ballpark, going up over the railing and snagging it, like really tough play. Much harder than the 95% probability that was put on it.
What's going on, OAA? Fix your stuff.
I don't know if they count how they do foul balls, but
or like, fly balls.
He's just athletic. I don't know if that's oversimplifying it too much. But he looked pretty bad at times in spring training. I don't know if he was just pressing or what the heck, or if just playing outfield defense in February and March in Arizona is a nightmare, which it probably is with the sun. But he's been good. Yeah, I think I'd probably put him third on defensive outfielders. I would take him over Sal Frelick, I think.
Yeah, let's not forget also that he's being tasked, as many outfielders are, but he's not just stashed in one spot. He's being asked to play left field and right field. You know, those are two positions that he's not really learning, but those are what he's being asked to do. The catch today in foul territory on Sunday, I didn't even look up when I saw where it was headed. Like, well, he ain't catching that. No one's going to catch that. And then, you know, kind of an obscured view and the announcers are like, oh, he caught it. I'm like, yeah, right. Let's take a look at the review or whatever. And sure enough, the man came down with that baseball. Very impressive stuff. There is something else though, that's not as fun. If you are a Brewers fan right now, and that's the pitching. I actually have a conversation with Aaron Civale, Sunday starter. He spoke with me on the last homestand because obviously he's new here. He's made now three starts for the Milwaukee Brewers. The Brewers have not been able to get him a W yet. He's been pretty good. He matched Paul Skeens sort of pitch for pitch in that outing against the Pirates. Ultimately, the Brewers lost that game 1-0. He's given up his share of home runs. And I will want to talk about him. Anyway, the conversation is coming up at the end of this one, but about him and just the pitching staff in general. Freddy Peralta had a really good outing on Saturday, so that is encouraging, but he has struggled. And really, I don't know if there's anyone right now, any one player, bullpen or starters, that you could say definitively is going to be able to get you the outs that you need, whether that's there in the starting job or the relief job. Everything is kind of an adventure right now. And this trade deadline is coming up. We always get excited for it. It's never as like explosive as you might think it is, especially for this organization. They're not going to go get Garrett Crochet as much as most people could agree that would be a huge upgrade for them. I just cannot imagine a world where that happens. And it's going to be just more around the fringes. I don't know how this team survives the rest of the regular season pitching and the postseason with the pitching depth that they have. The depth isn't even the problem. The outstanding pitching is lacking on this team. There is no one I trust necessarily. How do you look at it? What do you see? Do you see some of the guys coming back as maybe the solution, that they do add something substantial at the trade deadline? How do you feel like things are shaping up?
So I want to agree with your point, but I will not stand for some of the slander that just came out of your mouth.
Oh.
No trust for Colin Ray?
No, Kurt.
No trust for Tobias Myers?
Well, Toby's interesting. I don't know. I might have to say Tobias Myers is getting to the point where he's pretty trustworthy. I still no, Kurt.
No,
I don't think
no. Trevor McGill's not on that list at all.
So Trevor McGill obviously has been phenomenal in the back end of the bullpen, and he's, I think, had all-star caliber stuff. He gives up a lot of deep fly balls, right? I mean, there was what was that game against the Blue Jays where both key outs landed on the warning track? Like, he's gotten a little bit fortunate, I think, with that. And then he gave up a home run on Sunday and another, you know, resounding double and a Carlos Santana fly ball that was hit awfully well to dead center that went for an out. He gives up the home run to CJ Abrams. I feel like it's not hard right now to get a ball in the air against Trevor McGill. And that's not his fault. The dude's been banged up a little bit this year. He got hit in the, you know, elbow with a comebacker. I think he's been about as good as you can expect. But do you trust him in a big spot to get those three outs at the end of a one-run game? I don't know. You have to, because he's the best that they've got. I'm just saying they're lacking in total those options.
I think I would like to see one inning Brian Hudson more.
That would be nice.
I would have some trust for that. What about Jared Koenig? No trust for Jared Koenig?
Well, he's coming off an injury, and he put two runners on with nobody out today. Loaded the bases with nobody out today. Absolutely pulled a rabbit out of his hat. You cannot discount that. But Elvis Peguero pretty much allows a batter to get on before there's an out.
Sure.
Every outing.
I will say Piguero is certainly not even near the top of the trust rankings right now. And the trust rankings are not bolstered in the bullpen. Like, it's not a great place to be. But that's a guy that you keep giving chances to because the stuff is so good.
Mm-hmm.
It's so nasty and it's so good. And it's just like commanded a little bit, just a little bit. And you will be the guy you were most of last year and not the guy that you've been for the last month and a half. There's some other guys in the bullpen that you can't, you know, like they just don't have that level in them. And when they're underperforming, it makes it a lot easier to cut bait.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to cut bait with some of these guys at some point. Devin Williams is two or three outings away from being back. He looks good. DL Hall, no idea what the plan is. Maybe he's back in a bullpen role. I have no earthly idea. That's just a byproduct of this rehab taking literally 3 months.
Yeah.
Joe Ross. But regardless, when he's healthy, he's back, and that's another arm who's gone. So not a great time to not pitch well.
I want to talk specifically about the roster and the names, because the Brewers made, a kind of interesting minor league trade today in acquiring a guy who was waived by the Mets, Tyler Jay, left-handed pitcher. He's going to start at Nashville. He's not part of the team now, but he does take up a 40-man roster spot that had been held by Joel Kunal. And the one thing I could say about Joel Kunal is I felt pretty confident that his 40-man spot would be easily given over to one of these guys that are coming off of injury, whereas I wasn't sure what the decisions would be after that. And now I'm back to scratching my head, because you mentioned DL Hall and Devin Williams. Ostensibly, those guys are coming back by the end of July, early August. Joe Ross gave up 8 runs at a rehab start, so I don't know if that resets the clock a little bit, but it sure looked like he was about to be coming back. I no longer know who gets these spots, because the Brewers don't have enough guys with options. I mean, Rob Zastrzyzny has done everything asked of him, but I'm guessing he has to be one of the guys. He has no options left. Hobie Miller, I think, has reached a service time threshold where he has no options left. So they're kind of in a bind with who they can send down. They're going to have to lose guys that they don't want to lose. I don't know how they do this roster gymnastics wise. Like, you can always figure stuff out, move guys around to the 60, but there aren't a lot of options. There aren't a lot of chess pieces on the board right now, Kurt.
It's just going to have to cut bait with someone. Probably. Yeah. I mean, maybe like, yeah. I think Hobie's at 5 years. He reached 5 years this
That's
year.
Right.
So he can decline an option.
That's right. And Hobie has been,
maybe he doesn't though. Maybe he doesn't.
Maybe he doesn't. I mean, Hobie, his numbers are quite bad, to be quite honest, but he has been, if you watch it, man, he's just been dinked and dunked to death. Like, he has not been stellar, but he's not been, oh man, they got to send him down. If you watch what he's doing, the numbers wise, they don't look good. I just don't know. I don't know what they do. I think they're going to have to make really difficult decisions. I wonder if the decision
Piguero
is.
Piguero has an option. He's not, I mean, Piguero's not, like, I just talked him up, but he's not pitching well right now.
Right.
You could get him right in AAA. He's got the option.
That's true. And I think they probably have to. And I don't know if Piamps is long for this team. I don't know if Milner's long for this team. I still think Piamps is a guy, like you mentioned with Piguero. That's a guy you want in September or October, because he has the stuff to be a major contributor. You don't, you know, maybe he's not at his best right now, but he could be when it really matters. And that would be a hammer. You know, that would be a hammer.
Yeah. He's also at the bottom of my,
he is of your trust ranking.
Totem pole. Yeah. It's a nice totem pole. Got it at a gift shop. We should get a totem pole.
You think with our faces and Todd Rosiak's face on it?
For the bullpen trust totem pole.
Oh, yeah, we could. Yes, I like that. I feel like we might end up culturally appropriating at some
point.
Yeah,
you know. Okay, so let's. Is there a totem pole we can use? Just a pole?
Well, now I already have the visual of like the various heads of the bullpen guys in vertical form, and I can't get that out of my head. I feel like that's too good. So we just can't call it a totem pole, I don't think. Okay. I think we just.
It's our pole of trust.
The pole of we should. There's so much danger. We're on the precipice of the edge of danger right now, Kurt. So I think
just don't tell my wife I'm buying a pole of trust.
There's a lot of there's a lot of moving parts right now. Like Aaron Civale, what are your impressions of him so far?
Wow, because, you got us back on track.
Well. When you don't have a good segue and your brain just starts, just say someone's name.
Aaron Civale.
uh, I legit don't know what to make of Aaron Civale.
He's a pitcher. I still like the trade because what it does is it buys you a little more buffer. Like you get to see what this guy has for 6-7 starts and then assess like what more you need. And I think what we're learning is they still need a lot. I know I messed around and played around with the theory of like, oh, well, they could get cute with this. No, don't do that. Don't go get an arm, like a real arm.
Yeah.
One that functions well.
Like Eric Fetty. Go get Eric Fetty.
Sure, Eric Fetty. Cal Quantrill.
Go get Cal Quantrill. Get both.
Cal Quantrill's not getting traded. The Rockies are like going to dig their heels in on this thing. This is what they do. They have
the Rockies.
He said once again this year, and they're not going to trade them.
The Rockies notoriously make good decisions at the deadline. I don't know who it ends up being. Pitching is always a premium. The Brewers haven't gone all in. Yes, they've gotten those relievers that have not worked out. Yes, famous curse situation. But they haven't really gotten like a impact starter since 2008. You know, I no disrespect to Jordan Lyles the first or the second time, but they have not gotten
Jordan Lyles, who ended up being CC Sabathia light.
But he wasn't
an impact starter at the time.
Great trade. But like they caught lightning.
He was just released.
I know Jordan Lyles available. He led the league in losses last year, I believe, with the Kansas City Royals. It is a tough scene. And the fact that he was still there is quite impressive on a team that's playing very well still, Kansas City. Jordan Lyles, round three. Let's go. Where was I going with this? They are going to need somebody for that starting rotation as soon as Wednesday, because they have four starters right now. They released Dallas Keuchel. They designated him for assignment. He elected not to take the assignment. He's a free agent. He's gone. So Dallas Keuchel era ends after four starts. They are legitimately short a starter. Now, maybe Bryce Wilson comes back into the starter's capacity and they go one more turn through the order to try to buy extra time to figure out what to do with DL Hall and Joe Ross.
Pitched today, though.
I know he pitched today, but can he pitch again Wednesday for like four innings?
I guess he could do a short. Yeah. He could probably go three innings, four innings.
I think they imagine Joe Ross would take that role. And then Joe Ross gave up eight runs in four innings. I realize in the minors, when you're rehabbing, you're just working on stuff and it's not necessarily about the results, but it's kind of a little bit about the results, right? Do you want to put a guy in who just gave up eight runs in his last start at AAA? So I don't know. I don't know what they do there. That might be a bullpen game, but like one of the options here is to just like keep going with DL Hall and Joe Ross in the minors, because you can then delay that decision about what to do with your roster and what, you know, what cards are on the table might change, because they might make a trade before the next time they need those guys to start. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, Carlos Rodriguez is around, but I don't know when he pitched this weekend. I don't think he did. So I guess he could be an option, but he has not been pitching particularly well either. Like they said that he was thrust into action that he wasn't really ready for.
Yeah.
And I don't know if three starts in the minor leagues suddenly, you know, makes you that much more comfortable pitching him. Like he just needs more time down there. So I'm not sure where they go with this. Jacob Mizrowski, I had to say it.
Yes, it's always good to say his name on a podcast, although probably he's been good lately, of course. He's been very, very good lately. And the fact that Matt Arnold once again brought up that he is an option for them in the second half, he said that last year. You know, they are seriously thinking about Jacob Mizrowski. So
how could you not?
That's not smoke, right? Like, that's not just we're taking our time.
It's not smoke. No, yeah. It's very if he had earned it last year, it would have happened.
Has he earned it this year?
Yes.
Based on his last few starts, but what about the body of work? Do you feel like he clicked something, flip the switch?
JR, the man in his last like month and a half has like a 7% walk rate.
Yeah, you're right.
That's basically he's really like what you need to see from him. But his ERA is also probably like in the twos in that span too. Like it looks really good. The command looks like it should look. Like everything you say about this kid when you talk about him, like, well, if he can throw strikes, well, guess what? He's dotting. He's doing it. Like the mechanics look a lot, you know, just really fluid too. So I don't know if it's reliever. Like I'm not so sure it's a great idea to try starting him right now. That should not be the plan. But there's no doubt he could pitch in the major leagues. Once again, you run into the issue of like, where is he going to fit?
Yeah,
because you got a lot of guys. But then again, you don't have a lot of guys pitching well. So
That's true. But again,
sometimes the door opens up.
Bringing him in means somebody has to go. There is a roster spot that has to be created for him on both the 40 and the 20, 26. So somebody's got to go. And yes, no one's pitching well. But again, do you give up on those guys now? Because they might be pitching well by the end of the season, which is ultimately what's going to matter. You know, it's funny. No Brewers team.
I might do it. Because what if Mizrowski's pitching well at the end of the season?
That's true. That's true. You don't want to waste those bullets on minor league outings and, you know, off-season workout plans. I get that. You know, interestingly enough, the Brewers, I looked this up to be sure, they've never been up by this many games at this point in the season and not won the division. They've never been up five games.
Well, there
games
you go. You said it.
So on July 21st. They've never been up five games and not won the division.
It's over.
It's over.
Said JR.
Print the t-shirts. NL Central champion Milwaukee Brewers. You know I don't believe this, that I absolutely do not yet buy that this isn't 2014 happening all over again, except 2014 was already happening by this point in the season. And this team, with a defense that doesn't slump, has put together the offense that it needs to overcome whatever was going on in 2014. So we're kind of past that threshold. The Cardinals are playing better, but are they that good? They're probably not that good. So they're going to go through some slides themselves. And I don't know.
In my head, I would say, well, the division doesn't really matter that much because you're probably still going to make the playoffs anyway. You're what, six and a half up right now on the last wild or the.
Oh yeah. One game behind the Dodgers. Wild
card team. Yeah.
One game behind the Dodgers for a bye, Kurt.
Yes. But the division does matter because you kind of want that bye.
It's true. You need the division to claim the bye. I mean, those two things, like I would not be worried about them in concert. Like they're if the Cardinals are bypassing if they're threatening for the Central, the Brewers are not going to be in the bye conversation. Like the Cardinals are not a bye team.
Yeah,
it's going to be because the Brewers came back down to earth some more, and the Cardinals were just waiting for them. We're gonna get to three up, three down here in a second, even though we only had the two games. But I do want to touch on the draft a little bit, and then also some second half predictions from you. I think I talked a little bit about that with Todd Rosiak last week, but had to get your thoughts as well. The Brewers, their first round draft pick, a high schooler. Surprise! Not what they've done recently. It's been all college bats, and then they went ahead and drafted Braylon Payne. A surprise. You wrote about this at jsonline.com. He is a toolsy outfielder, like a great long-term prospect, but definitely not somebody that a lot of people thought was going to be taken in the first round. I think of him a lot like I think of Eric Brown Jr. a couple years ago when they signed Jacob Mizorowski. And you can see my video on the slot system at jsonline.com if you're unfamiliar somehow with how the slot system works. But feels to me like
not just that video, JR. Lots of video of you.
Oh, that's right. Yes, the RNC.
You're
was
a video this. Queen.
I am indeed. We had a lot to say during the RNC. Actually, we'll touch on that and remember when a little bit. But
you're not the only person that had a lot to say in the RNC either.
No, there were thoughts that were shared. Mostly, I was just in a suit. That was the big development for me, was wearing really nice clothes on set inside the hard perimeter of the RNC. What a time to be alive. And anyway. What was I talking about? Oh, I think of him like Eric Brown Jr. He was there to save some money. You know, like he's a quality guy who could develop into something special, but the Brewers had their eyes on other players that they wanted to be able to afford further down the draft. And I know that seems counterintuitive for anyone who follows the draft and just thinks of it like the NFL or the NBA draft. You just start with the best players and go down. This just is not like that. And it wasn't that they just wanted one guy. There were a couple guys that they had their eyes on. And I think that's what you saw with later picks. So Braylon Payne, who has, of course, being the highest pick, has the highest slot value bonus money in the draft. They wanted to save as much as they could, and that's the way to do it. That's how I look at it. He could be special. I don't know. We won't know for like 17 years because it's a high school player. But what are your thoughts on him and any other thoughts that you have from the draft this week?
Yeah, big project. The thing is, though, like he's incredibly fast, and as we talked about, that's a large part of outfield defense. But like the reviews he's getting on his defense already are pretty incredible, which you know eschews some of the significant questions you have about his bat. I remember when Eric Brown came out of Coastal Carolina in the first round, it was like, okay, there's a lot of questions about his bat and this funky setup. Oh, and there's also questions about his defense.
Yikes.
What position does he play? Like, oh, in this case, you got a kid who's what, 17, 18. And you don't really have the defense questions already if you're projecting. So it's an interesting pick. It's certainly one that was a big surprise at the time. But in the grand scheme of things, like, we probably could have seen this coming if we thought the Brewers were going to basically do the thing they did last year and try to take as many high school players, fit as many high school pitchers into this hodgepodge of money that they can. And that's absolutely what they did. Like, it's very clear what the Brewers wanted to do going into this draft. You know, they take that underslot at one. They buy Bryce Message down in the second. Maybe not buy him down, but they bought him to that spot a little bit. Bought Lavonis to where he was. Super intrigued by that that arm, by the way, Chris Lavonis. Like, the extension he gets, the athleticism, super projectable arm in the second round there. And in the middle, sandwiched is, oh, look, a college hitter, Blake Burke. The Brewers must do that with their second pick in every draft.
It is written.
that early second round, or like the comp round. College hitter, you are a Brewer.
This guy's got some pop too. He can hit dingers.
Tons of pop. It's a little different than some. It's like a worse Brock Wilkin with worse defense.
Much worse. Play first base.
Well, so Todd Johnson, the scouting director, in the press conference that night, like, raved about his defense, which I'm not going to say I'm a Blake Burke defensive savant or guru, so I'm going to defer to what the people that are, the scouts, say. And, like, the reports were not good on his defense.
No.
So we'll see. We'll see. But what's interesting is just how many high schoolers the Brewers take. They took the most high schoolers of any team in the draft this year. On day three, like, I don't know if any other team took more than three. They took seven. So this is just the way they wanted to go about it. And, like, you can't really argue with the haul. There's a lot of interesting names, especially on day three. You know, once you get into, like, oh, they got that guy there. That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm super curious to see how this shakes out for rounds 11 through 20. They got pretty good results last year by saving enough money to afford six of those guys. And those are the pie in the sky guys, the guys that you don't really know if you can afford. And then you get enough money saved and you wind up going after those guys too. That's where they got Bishop Letson, who's one of the top pitchers in their organization now. It's where they got Brett Wetrowski, who's had a really good year. And there's a couple names I'm forgetting, including Justin Chambers.
Justin Chambers, yeah.
Yeah, whom they traded to the Dodgers for Brian Hudson.
Josh Adamczewski. I don't know how to say that last name, but he's mashing in the complex league right now. There's a couple other guys in the comp, like Bjorn Johnson's not pitching great, but he's down there. So, like, they signed a lot of those guys.
Yeah.
I think Chambers then might have been the fifth one. Maybe we named them all. Possible.
Chambers is a 20th round guy and got by far the most of anyone in that 11 through 20 range. I'm curious to see how many of those guys they sign. There's a couple guys in there that would be fascinating that I don't think they can sign, but I thought that about, like, Letson last year, and then they signed him because they had so much savings from those first 10 rounds. And it kind of feels like that's what they're going for, because there were a few picks in those first 10 rounds. They were like, well, they're saving there for sure. They're saving there for sure. I feel that we got the first two picks.
There's a couple guys in here you kind of think they're not going to sign. Jaden Dubanowicz is the one that stands out. Like, generally speaking, the better the college commitment, like, in terms of program prestige,
right?
Yes, the less likely they are to, like, they are to sign. But the Brewers took guys committed to Indiana. A couple of really interesting guys committed to Indiana, and like Pitt, Joey Broughton, the 13th rounder, is going to Pitt. Like, those are commitments that you can theoretically buy guys off. Luke Adams, remember him? He was committed to Michigan State.
Absolutely.
That's a similar thing. Like, this is a Brewer's strategy. This Bishop Letson was going to Purdue. Like, you get these guys you think you can steal away from these commitments. They tried it with Brady Neal a couple years back. Gerangelo, the first round pick for the Mariners, the switch pitcher.
Yeah. They
tried it with him. But, you know, those are, like, Brady Neal was LSU. Gerangelo, if I'm butchering
that. He's at SEC.
Mississippi State. Like,
yeah.
So Dubanowicz is Florida.
Where's Nunnally going?
James Nunnally's Virginia. That's pretty good one, but, you know, if they're taking guy who's their second high schooler taken of the day, like, I think they have a chance. But then you've got Cooper Malamazian, shortstop, he's Indiana. Noah Weck, he's the local kid, Oklahoma State. I think they feel pretty good about that one. Henry Brummel is Indiana also, I believe. So
yeah,
theoretically, they should be able to get four or five of those guys on the second day. Now, they haven't announced any signings of us as of us recording this. There are some verbal agreements in place, but I think the details on a couple of those are still getting ironed out, and the Brewers kind of start high up with their guys and then trickle their way down. Like, you'll see some orgs are announcing like 15th rounders already, and the Brewers kind of like see what they have left over to play with.
Which makes sense. I mean, that's how you do this.
Yeah. And then is it kind of like Hunger Games?
Which one of you will take the $1 million?
Yeah. It's like a social experiment. Like, okay, all right, this is how much we have. Who wants to be a big league player or a professional player? Who wants to do it? And it's a standoff of 18-year-olds.
It's a weird process.
Who don't want to go to college.
They do not most likely want to go to college. They would love to start playing professional baseball. It's just a matter of how much money. So you got to wait a while. Like 3 years then have to go by before you can get drafted again under most circumstances if you're going to a 4-year. So it's a tough call if you're 18. Like, do you want to go now or wait 3 years and see what happens? Or 2 years in a lot of cases too. Gerangelo was, 2022, so it's 2 years for him, and it worked out handsomely because he went from a bottom 10 round to a first round pick. So that worked out.
What would you have done? What would you have done if you were offered a job? You could start at a small town Gannett paper out of college or out of high school. Sorry, out of high school. No need to go to Valparaiso. Here, we'll give you the money right away.
Yeah.
What would you have done?
That's a really good question. I have never thought about that.
You would have been a day one pick, so you would have signed.
But in high school,
I would have been day three. So I'm probably going to school.
You were not a day three. You don't know the breadth of your ability when you're in high school. You don't know if you're going to be great or completely average or terrible. You have no idea. And even if you do have an idea, you are full of high school doubts. So like, I think I probably would have taken the money because I wouldn't be sure that it would work out for me in college, even though I wanted to go to college and have a good time and, you know, meet people that are now lifelong friends. Like, if the job were the thing that were defining me, I'd have to jump, I think, Kurt. I don't know.
Yeah,
man.
I mean, okay. Well, when you're going to the Ivy of Central Indiana, you have to go.
The Ivy of Central. They have a lot of names, Kurt. That's not one of them. Before we go to
raise the roof.
Valpo, raise the roof. That's not a good one either. No. Predictions. Second half. I was gonna throw out what you thought.
Jesse Winker will be the best hitter on the Brewers. Oh, sorry, that was last year.
But it isn't impossible this year.
Ooh.
Jesse Winker, the best hitter in the second half. It's not impossible, Kurt. I wouldn't even call it implausible. Although it's unlikely.
I don't think that would go over great.
I think it's probably a ship that's best left sailed, but I'm not positive. He's certainly going to be available. I want to say I think they're going to get a pitcher. I want to say that I think they're really going to try to address their major weakness. I've just never really seen it after 2008. Like, I've never seen them go really in on a starting pitcher. And there's good reason for that.
Okay. But I mean, they addressed the weakness last year.
They did.
Granted, there was the hitters were all the hitting pool was crappy last year.
Yes.
So it was tough. So they did the best they could without really sacrificing anything, which, by the way, how's Justin Jarvis doing this year? Hold.
You're going to tell me? I don't know. I know Mark Canna has fallen off quite a bit. Now, Carlos Santana, we got a front row view of him in Minnesota after he hit a monster home run to tie the game. But
I thought he did it again today, by the way.
Oh, I did too. The swing was great. The swing was great.
Jarvis. Bad at AAA, sent back to AA, pitching well there. Seems to be a theme.
I think the Brewers did the absolute best they could at the deadline last year, and it worked. It worked out.
Totally. I mean, like, Johnny Severino's a nice little player for sure, but you got to do what you got to do to get Carlos Santana or like someone.
Yeah, I feel like the need is even more exemplified this year because game one of a series rolls around and Freddie Peralta is probably still your guy. He's your best pitcher starter, but he's unreliable. I mean, he'll flash for you and go like he did even after a really slow start, I thought, on Saturday, and turn in six great innings. He's still going to just give you six great innings, and then you're going to have to fill the void. Like, there's flaws everywhere. There's nobody that you could say with certainty is going to go seven solid innings in a playoff game.
Man, the best playoff runs are always the ones where there's that young kid, that 21, 22-year-old cat, just throwing gas and David not afraid Price. Of the moment.
Yep, you're absolutely right.
It just makes you want to see what the Miz experiment could look like, right?
I'm hearing what you're saying.
It's tantalizing.
That's a good prediction, that Jacob Mizorowski is here and contributing to a playoff run.
Their best October roster features an electric and functioning Jacob Mizorowski. He provides something that no one else on this staff does.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, in terms of seal, I mean, not okay, that's not true. Freddie's ceiling, but like,
I don't know about Freddie's ceiling anymore. I think we've hit the ceiling. I think we know more about him than we did then. The ceiling is higher for Mizorowski because he's younger and he's untapped potential at this point. Freddie is what he is, and that's going to be a guy who sometimes goes out and gives you six shutdown innings, and that's great. And, you know, maybe on his best day, seven shutdown innings. But for the most part, it's going to be inconsistent inning to inning, pitch to pitch. And I mean, still the best you got.
There's a good argument to be made that, like, Jacob Mizorowski best case is Freddie Peralta.
I suppose.
I think it's higher. I think his best case is, well, I can't think of a good comp off the top of my head, but like really good Walker Buehler, maybe.
I like it.
That's reaching for the stars.
But speaking of young kids who had great playoff runs,
there's a good comp. That's one.
I think that's a really good one. I think Jackson Chourio should be your number four, number five hitter. And I think at some point we're going to get there. Like, Rhys Hoskins, all due respect, it's not happening. He had a great home run. He's got pop. He's got time.
He's had some timely hits. It's funny because he was like hitting well, the knock in my head on him was like, well, when does he actually come up in a big spot? Like, he had the one homer against Kittredge, against the Cardinals. That was a big spot.
Yes.
But then since he's come back, it's like, well, what has he done? Just the big ones. Yeah. That's it. The double against the Padres, the grand slam the first time to take the lead, the grand slam the second time to take the lead, the homer today. Probably another one in there too. Like,
they lost the game. They lost the game against Washington when they had a 5-0 lead in the first, but that double with two outs to plate the first two runs of the game, I thought might almost be a moment that we look back on in the season, because things were looking really bleak. They had started off really good and it was kind of going downhill, and he quickly flipped the switch because then they ended up scoring five runs. Now, they did lose the game, so none of that actually mattered, but it was a timely hit in my mind, even in the first inning. It was a moment that they needed. He does seem to provide that. And there's going to be an intangible value to having a guy like Rhys Hoskins there, but I just think he's got to be lower in the lineup, as much as I don't care about lineups. Like, let Jackson Chourio be in a position to really, really cook, because he can carry this team now. He's at that level.
Can I offer some? Oh, maybe we should get a three up, three down, and then I'll throw my thoughts in here.
Okay. Yeah. I like that too.
I don't want to say we're dragging, because we're cooking.
We're cooking. Yeah. I was going to mention Craig Yoho as well.
Craig Yoho. Yes.
I don't think he's going to be here. I think there's too many roster spots spoken for. I don't think you're going to see him this year.
He's one of the best eight in the bullpen, though.
100%. I just don't think they're going to commit to axing guys.
I'm foolishly convinced. Once again.
I don't know, man. I'm not seeing it. All right, let's get into some of the more granular details from the week. We only had two games, but we still had other things to talk about. It is three up, three down. Kurt, I'm going to let you start. I know you had something on your plate there.
Yeah, so this is kind of a seg from the last where we were. I'm just going to hit a couple things. Jake Bauer's bunt.
Oh, my God. What a crisp
thing I've ever seen. He needs to stop bunting, number one.
Why is he bunting anyway? Oh, my gosh.
There's like an auto bunt in these guys' minds, first and second, nobody else. Actually, maybe it was called. That's the only time Murph seems to call for the bunt, is that spot.
It's not good.
He's done it twice, and it's failed both times. Monasterio once, and Joey Ortiz the second time?
That's correct. No, that was the first time, back in Miami.
Yeah, Joey Ortiz, okay.
Stop doing
and
that.
Bowers has tried to bunt too, and I think he popped out doing it. So he should stop doing that. That was quite fun. That was a pretty funny play though. Like you could sort of watching it on TV, you could see the train wreck happening. He pops it up. You're like, oh my gosh. You're like, wait, no one's gonna get to that ball. Oh, it'll just roll. Oh no, he touched it.
Stephen Okert is not beloved by Minnesota Twins fans anyway. He has had a rough one. And the decision to touch that bunt confounds all understanding. I don't know what happened.
He touched it.
His brain locked up.
He touched the bunt.
He did. His brain locked up, and the Brewers ended up having a massive inning, and it quite honestly would not have been that bad. That was a play that you it's so easy for the Brewers to have lost both of these games this weekend, and instead they come away with some W's. That's just the way it is. And man, did he screw that up real bad. Real bad.
You haven't watched Finding Nemo recently, have you?
I have not like recently.
You didn't.
Oh,
you,
yes. He touched the bunt. I get it. It's when he touches the boat,
means,
Kurt.
It just means you need to have another kid so you can watch these movies all. Speaking of which, I went to the Brookfield Public Library and we saw Elsa and Anna.
Fantastic.
This week. It was great.
They live in Brookfield? That's weird.
I know. Emma was really confused by it. I was like, just trust me. Just go that's with them.
Do you think that this counts as their summer home in Brookfield? You know, Arendelle's like a wintry place normally or kind of.
Olaf somehow was there too.
Amazing. Love a good summer home in Brookfield. Good stuff.
So Jake Bowers. I have contradicting thoughts on the first base situation, but I think ultimately Rhys Hoskins just needs to play. Like that's what you need. You need him to get it going. That's what you need to have happen.
I think you're right. What a huge boost that would be.
Jake, but also in the back of my mind, I'm like, Jake Bowers should play more.
Maybe. Yeah.
It's kind of funny because he chases like sliders and curveballs at the back foot all the time. But in general, his plate discipline's pretty good. Like his swing decisions are solid. He hits the ball hard. He hits it in the air. He's a pretty good defender. He's left-handed. There's good arguments for playing him more, especially with Hoskins struggling. But you need to get Hoskins going. And with the way the outfield is shaking up, you've got some guys out there playing well and playing every day. And then you got Blake Perkins, too. Like, Yelich is going to DH more. Where are the Jake Bowers at-bats coming from if you want to play Hoskins?
Yeah.
And that opens a little bit of the door for the possibility of three catchers. Like, can Sanchez be the backup first baseman? I don't know what they're going to do there.
We need to talk about that.
Eric Haas is like in spring training. We were like, spring training performances being what they are. This one was super interesting. So it was like every ball he's hitting is a missile up the middle or to right. And that's what he's doing now. And that's what he did in AAA. So it's like, I don't think you want to lose Eric Haas. Not at this point. Not when he's been doing it for five
right. months. That's my number one as well. My number one is Eric Haas.
Go ahead.
Two home runs on Sunday, hitting the ball very well. Calling a really good game. And right now, like William Contreras receiving the ball has not been good this year. It's been a huge step back. And we've talked about that a little bit. Gary Sanchez is okay. It's fine. Nobody though is framing the ball as well or receiving the ball or call. Like I know they rave about William Contreras calling a game, but it feels like Eric Haas really has a good command of that discipline. If they send him back down to the minor leagues, they will, I'm almost positive, lose him. They will have to designate.
No, 100% they're losing.
They will lose him. So that leaves them with two catchers, two on the 40-man roster, because the third one, Jefferson Caro, is out for the year with an injury and is in the minor league. So he's not obviously going to be available this year. I don't think they can say goodbye to Eric Haas right now. You either have to ride this out until he gets bitterly cold and then say, okay, Gary Sanchez, your rehab assignment can now end. Or you move on from Gary Sanchez, which I don't think, I'm sure they don't want to do. I don't, if they wanted to do that, they wouldn't have had Gary Sanchez break the year in camp, you know, and you can't make that call. I just don't know what happens here. I don't know what they're going to be stuck.
You don't want to carry three catchers normally because it just hamstrings the roster. But here's the thing. What's the difference between carrying two catchers and a Jake Bowers than carrying three catchers?
So are you saying Jake Bowers would be the guy to lose his roster spot?
I'm suggesting it's a possibility.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. Having Gary Sanchez be like your backup first baseman.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, theoretically, Bowers is not a bad option against right-handed pitching.
Yeah.
But, also
doesn't have options
to play. And Gary Sanchez can kind of be the back of first base. I don't know. But you make a great point about not having other catchers on the 40 man. And on top of that, like the options, the non 40 man options aren't super.
They don't have guys either.
Brian Navarrete,
Francisco Mejia.
Is he even healthy? Is he even playing? I don't know.
He's been playing here and there, but like
it's certainly not what you want.
No.
Let's just say that.
You know, and Hoskins defensively has not killed them. He has been better, you know, since the early going.
Oh, okay. I'll take your word for it. Well, I'm not sure I agree.
Well, I don't know if defensive stats probably don't back that up, but there haven't been noticeable mistakes picking the ball.
It's not been as bad, sure.
Right.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe you try to trade one of these guys.
Sure.
But that leaves you still like with your two 40 man catchers. And maybe you could play that out for the final couple months of the year, but like,
I don't know, man. Especially with Contreras and Sanchez. Yeah. And Sanchez has had two hamstring issues this year.
Going back to your best 26, like, I think Eric Haas is on it.
I think the solution is that Gary Sanchez isn't coming back. And it's not going to be his fault. He's going to be a perfectly capable major league catcher, but he is an injury concern at this point. He is, I think, arguably just as good, if not a little better than Gary Sanchez. And you can't send Eric Haas out of here because you'll lose him. I think that's where they have to go. It's going to be awful to have to make that decision, but I don't know.
It's not an easy decision to make, but Eric Haas has made a huge impact just generally on the club since spring. So he's earned it.
I haven't been able to keep track if we move to a number two at some point, but do you want to try to go in a different
direction? The Dallas Keuchel era. Let's reminisce.
Four starts. Dallas Keuchel. As many as Julio Teheran last year.
No. Maybe they could have pulled the plug on the Julio Teheran experiment. Lots of contact. I think we talked after the Dodgers start, JR, where I was like, well, it's going fine so far, but I would not expect this to last very long, like the success or the experiment. And it did not. One more start. There was just like so many balls in play, so many hits. He did a pretty good job of avoiding damage, honestly, which is kind of what you would ask for him to do in this short sample. And then it makes sense, I think, to cut bait on it, like best 26. Dallas Keuchel's not on it. I don't really have many more thoughts than that. He did a good job while he was here.
Worth a shot. And our friend Jack Stern, I think, really presented this correctly in saying he writes for Brewer Fanatic. He's got great stuff, by the way. If you've never heard of Brewer Fanatic, you should absolutely check that site out. His fourth start against Washington, probably his best in terms of stuff and command and working the edges and doing everything he could. And yet, he couldn't make it out of the fourth inning and got hit around and had a 5-run lead to work with and couldn't get deep into the game at all. And if that's your best, that's probably a sign that this isn't going to work. You know, like he just can't generate swings and misses. It's not for lack of skill or craft. He just doesn't have it in his arm anymore. And if you can't get those swings and misses, you're bound to be vulnerable to five hits in a row, which is what happened. Five guys in a row reached against him, even though he wasn't walking anybody. They were just putting the ball in play, and it was, you know, solidly up the middle or into center field or whatever. And that's how the Nationals got back into the game and ultimately won that game. Now, they won three of Keuchel's four starts, but it wasn't really because of Keuchel. You know, the start in Colorado was good enough, I think, that you could give him some credit for keeping them in that game. But it was...
I don't know how he got through the start in L.A.
I don't either. It was dicey. It was like...
That was a sight to behold.
Every inning was walking a tightrope.
That's one of those fun games to look back on. They're like, you remember the Dallas Keuchel start in LA?
How did they win that
where
game?
He had like 11 runners on in four innings, gave up no runs.
Yeah, it wasn't meant to be. I think he probably knew that too. I'm a little surprised he didn't elect to stay in the organization, but that is absolutely his right. He is a former Cy Young Award winner. Certainly wish him well. And the Brewers, even though they are thin on starting pitching options, they had to make that move. And part of the reason they had to make that move is my number two. It's that Brewer Hicklin was added to the 40-man roster. He is a outfielder who has fared very well, had a nice spring training, has fared very well at AAA Nashville. He is an outfielder primarily, and it's pretty clear he had an opt-out. They had needed a spot on the 40-man roster, and since they knew Keuchel wasn't in their plans going forward, they just went ahead and cleared some space on the 40-man and put Brewer Hicklin on it. So that gives him a greater likelihood of getting called up at some point. The problem is still the problem that he's faced all year and that the Brewers have a lot of outfielders. I still think he might be one of their five best outfielders. Now, I'm not positive. I'm not sure of that, but I feel like there is a window for him to make an appearance on this team at some point. It feels like the Brewers are too married to the guys they have in there. It's going to take an injury for that to happen, but I don't know. How do you feel about him? Do you feel like he has any place in this team going forward?
Maybe in the future, like, I don't know if you could hear that, but a car just went past my house at like at least 80 miles an hour.
They are. What are they headed for? What are they late for? It's about 8 p.m. as we record this.
Oh, this is Howard Avenue drag racing, baby. This is what happens.
They're fired up about the Brewers. Very excited.
This like mile stretch without a light. He's an interesting guy. Like, I don't want to like jump over the moon for Brewer Hicklin, but could be a serviceable depth major leaguer down the road. Like, you know, if you ask me who should be on the 40 man, him or Chris Roller, it's not even a question. It should be Brewer Hicklin 40 times over. His spring's performance was, you know, caught, opened some eyes. He's a great dude, fantastic person. One of the favorites that was down there in Maryvale this year. Don't really see it happening this year, but certainly adding him to the roster is, you know, it says what it says from the organization that like they want to see if there's more there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's your number three?
Me numero tres, JR, is, and I don't know if this is going to steal your remember when. Maybe I should do a remember when right now because I got a story with this. Do you remember Matt Bush?
You didn't steal my remember when. Very good. But let's talk about it because, man, I know where this is going. I sure do.
As soon as Carlos Santana came out to the plate last night, I was like, man. Or on Saturday, I was like, man, if this was a one-run game instead of two, this would totally end up as, you know, the Matt Bush game all over again. And then he hit the exact same ball. Like, that was the same. It was a sinker this time, but it was a fastball last year. And he crushed the exact same arc on the homer. Like, if the Allegheny River had been just beyond those patio seats and right, it would have gone to the Allegheny River again.
Truly amazing.
I don't know if it cleared the stadium. It might have been like caught in the top row. Anyway, walking out of Council's office after that game last year, this was the one time really where Council kind of like led on, didn't defend a guy, like was just frustrated with someone in their performance after a game. Like, he does not rip guys post game or like criticize at all, as we saw today with Christopher Morel. But he kind of let in about Matt Bush a little bit, like he's just not doing a job. And then as we walk out, you know, you're preparing, okay, well, let's go talk to Matt Bush. And what might be his last pitch as a Brewer ever. As we're walking out of the manager's office, I almost like take a charge from someone, and it turned out to be Matt Bush. So about a 0.1 second process in my mind of like, should I ask him to? No. That was it. I mean, he was out of there fast. First one out.
Yeah, it's not often that I thought that was actually in July. That was June 30th, like out minutes, I suppose, before July kicks in. He hits the walk-off home run for the Pirates.
Or furries.
Furries there. So June 30th, 2023, he hits a walk-off homer for the Pirates against the Brewers. July 20th, 2024, he hits a gut punch, two outs, two strikes, both times down to their last out. This one, a two-run homer to tie the game. Brewers end up winning that game. And in between, he played for the Milwaukee Brewers. That is just something. That Jason Starks, there's got to be something there that's never been done before. That's crazy. Wild stuff. All right, my third and final. There was an All-Star game. Were you aware that the All-Star game was played at some point this week, Kurt?
No.
Didn't register.
Quite honestly, no.
The American League wins 5-3. The Brewers continue to be the bad luck charm for all of baseball. When they were in the American League, the American League never won the All-Star game. In the National League, the National League never wins the All-Star game. They did win last year. That was nice. The Brewers did not play in that game, famously. So maybe not that famously, but this one, pretty forgettable. 2024, Christian Yelich, William Contreras both started. That was cool. They went 0-for-4. Contreras struck out. He got out in a really big spot in the first inning where it was second and third, and he grounded back to the pitcher. That pitcher was, yes, sir, Corbin Burnes, starting pitcher for the American League and the Baltimore Orioles, and a trade that is starting to look like maybe the Brewers could have done some pretty good things if that trade had not been made. There's obviously a long way to go. It's still a good trade for now, but Corbin Burns dealing, gets to start the All-Star game. And then Christian Yelich, because Contreras got out, was right ahead of him in the lineup, and Contreras made the third out both times. And that meant Yelich, Christian Yelich, led off the next inning. Both times he then had to face very difficult left-handed pitchers in Tarek Skubal of Detroit, who might win the Cy Young, and Garrett Crochet of the White Sox, who's the most in-demand pitcher at the trade deadline. And Yelich did what he could. He grounded out both times, but 0-for-4 showing. No extra Brewers, of course, appeared in the game beyond that, despite our protests. And that was that. The National League took a lead 3-0 on a Shohei Ohtani home run. They did not keep it. 5-3. Jaron Duren of the Red Sox with the big home run. He wins All-Star Game MVP, and the Brewers sadly forgotten in 2024.
So All-Star Games and the Brewers are generally going to be irrelevant in my mind because there's three that matter in my head. Four if you squint. One is okay. Prince Fielder.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is when Jeff Jenkins did not play.
Oh, yes. After winning the final vote, travesty.
Disgusting.
Terrible.
Disgusting effort.
The people wanted Jeff Jenkins. Why wasn't Jeff Jenkins there?
No memory of who the manager was that year. Maybe Dusty Baker?
Who cares? I have no idea.
Probably Dusty Baker.
But boo that man. All right.
Could have been Marlins guy. Whatever.
What's your third?
And then the third one is 2018.
Oh, yes.
So I don't think a single person in the Brewers organization will be bummed in the slightest that the All-Star game was boring and stunk.
Yes, five Brewers played in the 2018 All-Star game, and most of them did very well. Josh Hader was not one of them, either during or after. Oh, boy, did that go sideways in a hurry, for those who forgot. Paul Molitor once reached on catcher's interference. Are you saying that's not interesting?
I played the fifth.
Robin Yount once walked in front of the only Grand Slam in All-Star Game history. Are you saying
I plead the fifth?
Larry Sorensen once worked three scoreless innings.
I plead the fifth.
That's enough. Speaking of
I actually used to get super into the All-Star Game as a kid. Like, I would make a huge scorebook.
Same.
I'd like 100%. Draw a nice like picture on the cover.
It was my Super Bowl.
The 2007 All-Star Game was one of my, or no, 2008 All-Star Game was like still one of my favorite baseball memories. Just like staying up way too late.
Did Ben Sheets start that one? Corey Hart
played like 10 innings and nearly threw out Justin Morneau to send the game to like the 15th inning.
When you say nearly, do you mean that his 7 hopper to the plate almost made it there sooner than Justin Morneau?
He still almost threw him out. Uh-huh. It was a terrible throw.
The result, nevertheless, was
nearly threw him out because Justin Morneau is not fast.
That throw it's time to be done with this All-Star game throw is what that was.
Do you think so? Do you think he was mailing it in?
No, you know, he didn't get a lot of All-Star opportunities, so like probably not, but he got a lot of playing time that night because the game lasted a long time.
He was a two-time All-Star. Put some respect on this man's name.
Oh, and he played a lot in that game. Dionne Navarro, I remember, was in that game for a long time. Yes. There were a lot of Michael Young, I think there were a lot of dudes that should not have been playing as long as they were. That got
Aaron
a lot
Cook,
of time.
Is that the pitcher's name? The Rockies pitcher?
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
He pitched far longer than a pitcher should pitch in the All-Star game.
Like, yeah.
That would not fly today. Okay, right. Sorry. I'm taking up time. We're at an hour. Go.
Yeah, you mentioned the voting process. Let's go to another voting process, so to speak, as we go back in time with this week's look back in Brewers history. It is Remember When. Kurt, you mentioned earlier, I spent the majority of the week at the Republican National Convention hanging out, being a dude, reporting, not really hanging out.
As one does at the NRC. Being a dude.
It was definitely a different week. Did some video reportage with my co-host, I guess, Kristen Bry. We had like a morning show, which you can find all of that at jsonline.com or on the Journal Sentinel YouTube channel if you're really interested. These were more like daily updates. They're kind of out of date now, but you know, if you're into that sort of thing. I wanted to go back to a time when the presidency and the Milwaukee Brewers collided. That didn't happen this week because Donald Trump is not currently the president anyway, and also the Brewers were not in town. No one was in town because it was the All-Star break. I guess there were people in town in Arlington, but there was no baseball. I was taken back to the first game in Miller Park history, and I also think that's interesting because we just passed the 25th anniversary of the crane collapse in 1999, the very tragic crane collapse, Big Blue going down, set construction of the stadium at Miller Park back a full year, but more importantly, killed three construction workers. It was very sad. We did write a little about that or had video on that at jsonline.com if you're interested, but Going forward a little bit, the actual opening then of Miller Park was going to be 2000, and instead it's April 6, 2001. And who was there to throw out the first pitch but sitting president George W. Bush? It was pretty rare for that to happen. I think only something like two of the previous nine stadium debuts that Major League Baseball had thrown out there had featured a presidential first pitch. A lot of stadiums opened in 2000. I think Miller Park was going to be one of like seven of them or eight even maybe. I mean, it was a whole bumper crop. So obviously a president can't get to all of those games. George Bush would later throw out a much more memorable first pitch in the 2001 World Series. That of course was post 9/11. So he was the man on the spot for first pitches that year. But the opening of Miller Park didn't draw a huge like national audience. I would say the Washington Post wasn't there. The New York Times, Boston Globe, Sports Illustrated. None of those outlets sent people. WISN, though, local TV station, had 45 staffers there. Safe to say it was a very big game for the Milwaukee audience. Raleigh Fingers even was a maybe. He ended up showing up, I believe, but he was a maybe coming into the event. The governor was there at the time, Scott McCallum. But, you know, they did have a pretty big celebrity in George Bush who showed up to throw out the first pitch. He got a signed ball or signed a ball, I believe, for Rod Carew, for Hall of Famer, who was the Brewers pitching coach at the time. He joked that it should be the other way around because he was a big Rod Carew guy. George Bush, big baseball guy. He had, you know, been part of the ownership team or was the owner for the Texas Rangers. Jose Hernandez, Brewer shortstop, made the joke that he'd been traded from the Rangers to Cleveland, and George Bush was like, I didn't make the trade. I told them not to do it. So that was kind of funny. His pitch bounces to the plate. His dad's did the same when George H.W. Bush threw out the first pitch in Baltimore in 1992. And George Bush was gone after the first few innings. He did not stay for the full game. But there were protesters actually out there. They were handing out baseball cards, calling him the most valuable polluter. They did not like his record on climate. There were extra metal detectors, of course. Tommy Thompson was there. He had members of his cabinet there. But for the most part, it was, you know, he was obviously the main attraction. It was kind of cool. It wasn't positive. Nobody was positive he was going to make it. There was some stuff going on in China, and it wasn't a sure thing that he would make it.
When is there not?
Yes. Whom's among us? And actually, this is a game that I don't remember very well or at all, which is interesting because the Brewers started the year 0-4. But then win that game 5-4, and Richie Sexton, who actually was, I guess, joking before the game that he was going to try to pull a prank on George W. Bush. But he hit homers in the eighth to break a 4-4 tie against Dennis Reyes, big lefty for the Cincinnati Reds. Breaks the tie, and the Brewers win 5-4. So a thriller in that first game at Miller Park, which oddly, I just don't remember that one very well for some reason. This was obviously a terrible year for them. 2001 Brewers baseball is not where it's at. 2002 is even worse. But for some reason, that game just doesn't stick out in my mind as much as it should. But the opening night, the president throwing out the first pitch doesn't get much better than that.
Are you familiar with Dennis Reyes's game?
I mean, he's a big fella throwing not very hard left-handed.
This man was not good.
Okay.
And then in 2006, he goes to the Twins. 66 games, 0.89 ERA.
Love that for him.
The King among us.
He is great.
Portly fellow.
Oh, I love the Portlys. I love Ray Kings of the world. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a yes for me. All right. Let's finish this off. We've talked way too long. Kurt, I missed you. That's what it is. That's why we're well over an hour. But it is time to shut it down with Kurt's Take of the Week. Here it is. Kurt Blanche.
Yeah, so I could go on here about swinging for the lake.
Oh, swinging for the lake, Kurt.
Not going to do that. We're going to see an old friend tomorrow on the other side of the dugout. And you know what? Going to let their reporters and their manager have their own
one interactions council
and relationship. Because on this side of things, you know, things are okay.
Yeah.
And we'll leave it at that. No, JR, while you were spending your mornings at the RNC talking about things,
Republican
important things,
talking about Republicans
and important Republican things,
I suppose.
I was checking Dominican Summer League box scores.
Oh, yes, okay,
as I am wont to do.
I'm excited about this.
I standard. We gotta talk about some guys.
Yes,
I can't. So, I came out with my top 31 Brewers prospect, maybe top 32 Brewers prospect rankings.
Okay.
The other week at jsonline.com. Huge undertaking that didn't feel like that huge of an undertaking because, like, I kind of just updated throughout the year and, like, have these little blurbs and, like, so. But the point here is I thought I was being a little bold with some of my rankings on these Dominican Summer League players that had played, like, 3 weeks of baseball at that professional baseball at that point. I'm not sure I was high enough on a couple of guys, Luis Peña and your boy, our boy,
Jesus
Mate. Jesus made.
Every now and then you just text me or message. You just that's, Jesus made.
That's usually when I'm checking the box.
I imagine it is. Yes. Jesus Mate is having a very nice start to his professional career.
And Luis Peña, even better. Mm. And he's faster. And he homered in the Dominican Summer League game. All-star game, I should say, on Sunday. Yep. And there was a side angle, open side angle view of his swing. And I mean, it's not the first time we're seeing a swing. Like, I had a lot of video of him when he was signed. It's interesting. I don't want to say it's a Cunha light, but like, that's what the swing is. That's just what it is. Like, people compared Churio to Acuña, and that's not what it is. Jackson Churio's swing is not Ronald Acuña's swing. They're very different. This guy's kind of got like the same mechanics. Now, I'm not throwing the comp around, but I'm throwing dangerous comps.
But,
I want to be very clear. I'm not doing an Acuña comp, but I will do dangerous comps.
But otherwise, you will say Luis Peña's name and Ronald Acuña's in the same sentence.
If I could redo it, I'd put them around like the top 10 to 12.
Oh,
with all the risk that those packages present, they're super interesting. Those are just a couple names I wanted to talk about.
Is it possible that 2023 draft class that we're so in love with could be coupled with the Dominican class that we'll also end up being in love with?
Bring them here. I'm really excited to see them in spring next year. That's one of my favorite parts of spring. Like, with seeing Yofrey Rodriguez up close and like getting to talk to that kid. He's super fun to talk to as well. So
yeah.
I mean, that was Churio 3 springs ago.
Yeah.
2022 is like, this kid's interesting. So there's always one. And I'm super intrigued to see these guys next year. The system is, I don't want to say it. It's a little devoid of hitting prospects right now, especially with Caro on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's not a ton of guys to get like super enthralled about. So these guys are maybe sort of just filling that void. But
yeah,
I just wanted to talk about them for a couple minutes.
Yes, Jesus Mate. It's spelled like Jesus made. Get familiar with that name. Luis Peña as well, because they are very young. But we've just seen with Jackson Churio, very young doesn't mean that far away. It means far away, but not that far away, because Jackson Churio is a 20-year-old having a very good time in the big leagues at this point. All right, that is going to do it for this week's edition of Microbrew. I do have my interview still with Aaron Civale, one of the newest members of the Milwaukee Brewers. We'll be going to that right now. Kurt, before I send you away, any last thoughts?
Jesus made.
It's absolutely what I wanted you to say. Incredible. Love that. All right, here's my conversation with Aaron Civale. Thank you for tuning into this week's Microbrew. We'll have a full week of Brewers baseball to discuss. 3 in Chicago against the Cubs, 3 at home against the Miami Marlins. We'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.
My guest is Aaron Civale, new starting pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers. Did I say that correctly? Civale?
That's correct.
Civale. All right, excellent. I need to know, first of all, about your dog. I have seen pictures on Instagram. I need to know everything there is to know about your dog.
My dog's name is Stetson West.
Stetson West.
Yeah,
that's very Connecticut.
It's not Connecticut.
No.
It's the name of the dorm that my wife and I lived in our freshman year at Northeastern.
Okay.
We had that name in mind for a while.
Okay.
But we just call him Steady among many other nicknames.
Okay. Kind of dog is he?
Corgi with a tail.
Nice.
We had to do some deep research. Had to find a breeder that would keep the tail. It's not standard to keep the tail for breeding practices, but
okay.
We wanted him to have it. I'm so glad we did it. He expresses so much through the tail.
Yeah.
He's awesome. He's our life.
That's great. And the picture or the video I saw on Instagram is him in the snow. He seems like a snow person. Are you, is that you as well? You're from the Northeast, so I assume you've got a little snow in you.
Yeah, I grew up in New England. Definitely have learned to appreciate the cold over the years. It's something that you dislike at some point in your life and then come back around to it.
Yeah. I assume you maybe haven't even met all your teammates at this point. Maybe you've introduced yourself. Sal Frelick, also from the Northeast. I saw that you were at the Red Sox when they won the World Series 2013. I think you were at Game 6. I don't know if I actually have that correct, but what was that whole experience like?
That was correct. My teammate that was a year above me, James Mulroy, his dad played at Northeastern as well.
Okay.
Time before from the area, had a handful of friends. I hope I'm not spoiling any secrets on the back end of this, but
sure.
He made a couple phone calls to a couple buddies of his, and
nice.
Long story short, six or seven of us went from our dorm room watching the game to walking into center field with that, them
no
just
kidding.
Letting us into the game, and found standing room only. Seats kind of behind home plate in the concourse area, and we watched the rest of the game from there.
Oh, that had to be unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible.
Freshman fall, so as a grown-up Red Sox fan, is pretty unbelievable.
You've done this before where you've been traded midseason, so I guess back-to-back years. I guess maybe this is old hat, but how comfortable do you feel at this point, 2 weeks, 3 weeks into being a Milwaukee Brewer?
Last year was definitely more tough. I was a little bit caught off guard. We were half a game out of first place at the time.
Yeah.
And that was a team that drafted me, so naturally I had lifelong relationships already developed. It was 7+ years with the organization. It was my fifth season in the big leagues at the time, so whether it was players or staff or coaches, whoever it was, I just had developed so many relationships with them that are continue to persist to this day, and they will for a long time. With that said, getting traded is never easy. You develop relationships with the guys and everyone in the clubhouse, friends of the players, the wives of the players, their kids, whoever it may be. You're just naturally developing relationships with all of them. But having gone through it last year, definitely had that experience on my belt on how to handle it. Both times on the road, so first bit of living out of a suitcase is not ideal, but make do. That's what we do during the season. Half the year is out of a suitcase anyway, so I get to go back to Florida to pack up some of my things and see my wife and dog, which they're down there right now for the All-Star break, and then they'll make their way up here at some point when they can figure out travel and whatnot. But it's never an easy thing, but it's been as easy as it can be.
Yeah. How does somebody develop six pitches? That feels like a hell of an arsenal. I don't know if that's just experimentation or you had coaches. Like, how did you arrive at that weaponry, I guess?
I think for me, it's just I have a lot of pride in manipulating the baseball, and I think it's something that I take as a challenge. If there's a pitch that I don't have, I try and figure out how to throw it. I added a splitter a couple of years ago and then took it away just because I didn't feel like I was fully controlling the pitch. But I pride myself on controlling that baseball and making sure I know and do everything I can to understand what's happening and how it's coming out of my hand. So if I feel comfortable doing that and the numbers back it up and the coaches agree that it's a good enough pitch, then continue to work on it and build it and go from there.
Cleveland and Milwaukee both have this reputation of being very good with developing pitchers. I don't know if there's time for a team to do that in the middle of the season. I have no idea. They just throw a bunch of data in front of you and you can do with it what you will, or if that conversation exists. What was your experience when they brought you over? Did they say, okay, here's two things we can do differently and the rest of the way we'll just work it out, or here's a bunch of things? How was that conversation?
I'll add that Tampa is also in that.
Oh, of course, yeah.
So I'm very fortunate to have been in now my third organization that's very well known for pitching and development and having a good pitching reputation. With that said, I think whenever you go and acquire a guy, there's obviously a lot of things you like about him, and you want to let him continue doing what he does well. And there's certainly little things that you can improve on. Every big leaguer should have things they can improve on, whether you're 1 year into your career or 15 or 16 years into your career.
Yeah.
I think that's what keeps you around the game, is wanting to improve and wanting to continue to master your craft. That's what we are. We're all competitors, and we're doing it at the highest level. So with that said, I think there's a couple things that we'll be working on, minor tweaks, nothing major. But I think it's super important at the front end of this is just developing the relationships and making sure the trust is there. That's, for me, what makes the best coaches, is just having that relationship off the field and making sure there is more to it behind just the baseball. A lot of people know baseball. A lot of people are really good at understanding data and processing what's going on, but it's how you're communicating it, knowing that it's coming from a place of care and a place of growth. So I think from what I've experienced so far, that exists here all over the place, whether it's teammates, coaches, front office, whatever it may be. There's a lot of care around here, and I think that's a testament to what they've developed and what they've continued to grow in this organization.
Last one, and I hope this comes across as lighthearted because that's how I intend it. Where were you when these two, when Tampa Bay and the Brewers got into a little bit of a fight earlier this year? Were you in the building, right?
I was here, yeah. I was definitely on the outside of it,
just kind of perimeter,
processing what was going on. Not fast at all, so I will never be the first one to get off the bench and get into it.
Yeah.
Didn't really process what was going on.
I don't think anyone who did either.
It's kind of a heat of moment thing, competitive thing. But yeah.
All right. Thank you, Aaron Savali. I really appreciate it. Good luck going forward.
We love you.